Hi, this is Richard Liu of Ironwood Cider, located in Niagara Lake, Ontario, and I'm also the chair of Ontario Craft Cider Association, and you're listening to Cider Chats. Yeah.
Episode 138. Hello, and welcome to Cider Chat. My name is Rhea Wincoller, and I am the producer and cider MC of this weekly podcast, where we speak with makers, cider enthusiasts, and folks within the cider trade from around the world. This week, we're talking about the Ontario Craft Cider Association, because Richard Liu happens to be the chair for that association, and he's also the owner of Ironwood, a cidery based at Niagara-on-the-Lake, which is not too far. Actually, almost feels like a stone throw from Niagara Falls, but it's a little bit further. There's going to be more on that chat with Richard coming right up. But first, let's talk a little bit about what's happening out and about in Ciderville. Last week's episode was with Jennifer Dean of County Cider Company, which is based up in Prince Edward County. That is the North Shore region of Lake Ontario. Lovely region. I was up there and also speaking to our guest this week because, well, I was sponsored to come to Canada to do the cider tour trip. So a big tip of the glass to Ryan Monkman of Field Bird Cider. As he starts getting his cidery up, you want to definitely look for it, because by supporting him, you in turn support Cider Chat. And I want to just take a little break here, and then we'll come back with the letter that I did not get to read on last week's episode, all about Sidra and coming in from the importer known as Ciders of Spain. This letter came in from James Aspel of Ciders of Spain right after the episode 135 came out, which was titled Viejo High Pours in Fishtown, Philadelphia, which featured Viejo, a cider made by Current Cider, and their new tasting room based in Fishtown, Philadelphia. And I highly recommend going to see them and to support Current Cider, because they really support this here podcast. So I was excited to hear what James take on all that was. So I'm going to do a little bit of a snapshot of some of what he wrote, because it is a very long letter. So here we go. He writes, I guess Viejo is a Sidra style cider. I'm all for that. But if so, I need to put something straight. A porron, while foisted on tourists by the Basques, is just no way to appreciate Sidra, or something that its maker would like to provide some of Sidra's pleasures. The porron does exactly the opposite of what you need to fully enjoy a sidra. It concentrates the stream and sends it right down your gullet, unaerated, rather than opening the stream and exploding it against the curved wall of the glass. That is true, James. I absolutely agree that if you use the porron, and there's a photo of it in that episode, so you can look for a link in the show notes, or just go to ciderchat.com, episode 135. You'll get to see a picture of a porron if you're not familiar with it. This is classically a clear glass-like pitcher, but it has a very long stem, and it's a delicate piece of glassware. And we're seeing a lot of Americans playing around with it. We're seeing American bartenders, you know, kind of use it to pour it down the gullet of a cider drinker's throat, if you will, or to pour it into a glass. Yeah, that's not what they would do in Asturias or in the Basque region. In fact, what I know about Sidra, it needs to be aerated. And typically, you pour it in one single glass on the edge, and you only pour really like a shot of it, something that if you're going to be given that glass, and you're given that glass immediately after it's poured, you swallow it right back. You don't sit and savor it like we would, I don't know, a high tannic cider that is meant to be in the glass. It's really, really different style of drinking, and that's part of the fun. And I agree, James. You know, Americans have kind of taken this and gone the long shot way. To entertain tourists, I say, why the heck not? I see nothing wrong with that. I find it entertaining every time I've seen a bartender or somebody kind of swing it back and the whole crowd gets going. I think that's a hip hip hooray time for Sidra and just that kind of sour style. And, you know, no, we cannot make Sidra like they do in Asturias or in the Basque region. We can't because we don't have the same terroir. It will never be the same. We make our own version wherever we are in the world. Should we call it Sidra? Maybe we should call it sour cider. I don't know. We're still trying to figure that out, aren't we? Sidra isn't, as far as I know, a trademark name, but Americans are using it. So I guess it's okay. It's not trademark. However, like the word pommel, which is a French word, is totally trademark and really shouldn't be used by American makers. So that just brings me to the point that I think we need to find our own names for this, and we're having our own style, and it's kind of all good. Keep up your good work, James, importing Sidra from Spain. If you want to send my way, that'd be great. I'd love to taste some and talk about it. And as far as it being, you know, a bad thing, I don't see anything wrong with it. You know, what they're doing down at the Fishtown bar for current cider is having fun. And in Ciderville, it's all about having fun. If you have a thought about something that's come on this podcast, do not hesitate to send it this way. All these comments are good and really appreciated. You could just send me an email to Ria, that's spelled R-I-A, at ciderchat.com. It's never too early to start planning for travel out and about to cider festivals and cider tours. Speaking of which, don't forget the Normandy Cider Tour that I am leading coming up the last week of September. Oh my goodness. I was just talking to one of the folks going on it and we're like, oh, we can't believe it's like T-minus how many days, like 41 days or something insane. I mean, time is flying by. So exciting to just be able to wander out and about in Normandy and hang out with some of the most amazing cider makers while there. Ooh. If you want to go, there are two slots that are still open for that trip. So just contact me, Ria at ciderchat.com, or you could go to the Totally Cider page at ciderchat.com to get the details. But what I really want to talk about besides that is cider festivals, and there is one that is going to kind of coincide with this conversation with Richard at Ironwood, and that is the Toronto Cider Festival. That is a two-day event with a couple sessions on Friday, August 24th and the 25th. One thing about Canada, the drinking age is 19. So if you're up in that area and you're interested in cider, you have to be at least 19 years old to be able to go to this Cider Fest, which really looks like an outstanding time. So there's a link in the show notes to that. And then the second festival happens on the other side of the Atlantic Ocean, and that is in Ross-on-Wye, which is the Herefordshire region of the UK. So that's West County. And we just love Ross-on-Wye Cider and Perry Company. And this is their event. It's going to be taking place again at the end of August on the 31st through September 2nd. And it includes camping. That's what I like about the Brits. I mean, they don't just have a cider festival and then everybody closes shop and goes their different ways. No, they are partying when the sun goes down. Camping. I freaking love that. So if you want to check out that festival, do. You could just kind of Google it, or you could find it also on the links to the show notes. Again, it is the 2018 Ross Cider Festival. Coming up next here, we're going to be speaking with the chair of the Ontario Craft Cider Association. And Richard Liu is also the owner of Ironwood, a cidery and also a winery called Sunnybrook, based in Niagara-on-the-Lake. Now, I was excited to post this particular episode before a bevy of other Canadian makers that I had spoken to while on my cider tour out and about in Ontario, specifically because I wanted to hear what was happening on the business side of this growing market for Ontario's cider makers. So we're going to delve into that full speed ahead in this chat. But before we get there, we're going to find a little bit about Richard's background himself. So let's all now grab a glass and join this chat with Richard Liu of Ironwood Cider in Niagara-on-the-Lake in Ontario, Canada.
I was born in Taiwan. Mm-hmm. Immigrated to Canada with my family when I was 10, and did all my schooling here, all the way through undergrad. And never really been a, I wouldn't say I was a craft fan per se. At that point of my life, obviously I was still not legal yet, but for the most of that time frame.
So well, isn't the drinking age a little bit lower in
yeah, Canada? It is. It's 19.
It's 19.
So
okay.
Usually by the second year of your university. Not to mention, you know, not to say that that's what people like right. usually started their first.
Right. Not to promote
but, no, exactly.
All,
no, no, of course not. Definitely
just
not.
Know.
But yeah, but it wasn't really, you know, it wasn't something, you know, it was so that's kind of what I wouldn't say that was affiliated with cider per se. And when I finished my undergrad, I went to Asia and worked in the corporates for a few years, and mostly on the marketing side. Mm-hmm. And we decided, me and my wife at the time, decided that we want to start a family. So we decided to move back to Canada. Mm-hmm. And we were looking at a few options in terms of what we could do in Canada. And I've always wanted to start my own business. Just because my that's kind of what my parents were, small
yeah.
business owners.
Yeah.
And so growing up, that was the kind of the, you know, the ideal. They never really tell me about the hard works of being a small business owner. If they did tell me, then I probably would have not do it. But yeah, but anyways, that was the time when I turned 30. You know, I had a really kind of the heart, you know, soul searching. I freaked out, I have to admit, when I no longer put that two in my front. I don't know if you're probably not there yet, but you were there. I couldn't sleep for that whole night when I turned 30.
Wow.
And I was just like, mm-hmm. wow, like, what am I doing? And is this really what I want? And so mm-hmm. at the time I was like, you know what, let's look at things and see how it works. And so I started looking to booze industry, really, not because I love to drink it, but because of the fact that I would be able to live in the rural communities. To me, that's a big something I really wanted to be able to achieve.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
When I was in Taiwan, my grandparents were farmers. So as a little kid, I used to spend a lot of time in the farm, and I really enjoyed the time there. Obviously, I moved into the city and never really left, but I was really hoping that at least my kids would be able to enjoy some of that. Unfortunately, my parents are not farmers, so they live in a high-rise condo in the city. So there's no sense of my son ever visiting their grandparents in the farm. That's probably they're going to an elevator, you know, press something in and go up. So that's not really ideal to me. So I settled and I was like, you know what, this is, you know, I want to do something rural and related. And I kind of settled on the alcohol, you know, beverage alcohol side of
yeah.
things.
Yeah.
And at the time, you know, I didn't know exactly. I mean, obviously I did all the research, a lot of that stuff. But I was still a little bit kind of, no, wasn't really sure. And then But I still moved here, you know, thinking that I was going to go to, there's Niagara, obviously, is kind of like the winemaking capital of Canada. Mm-hmm. You can, if, yeah, for sure. I'd say that'll be fair. And thinking about, like, you know, going to school. And then, so that's what was my plan, is to kind of learn a trade, maybe work at the wineries for a while, and then mm-hmm. see, you know, kind of go from there. And this place was put on for sale, and it was really reasonable. So it was basically a, you know, price of a Toronto condo. So I was looking at it, and I was like, you know what, I'll just do it.
Wow.
And that was when I didn't know anything. I know it from textbook. I know those diagrams. You know, I know how how you pitch the yeast in. Yeast will convert, you know, sugar into alcohol. I know all that stuff. But I mean, obviously doing it. So the first 2 years for sure was really difficult. But especially the first year. But, you know, after first year, I start to get a really hang of it. And just before this, we were talking about how I got into the cider space, you know, and, you know, initially I was thinking about getting into winery, but, you know, obviously with the reasons I mentioned, you know, in terms of getting access in the wholesale side of things, I'm personally a wholesale guy. I'm not really the kind of guy who just want to have this retail storefront and sell my product through the door. I mean, obviously there are many people who like that kind of business model. But for me, just because one of the reasons why I really want to do this is because I want to be able to export Canadian products to outside of Canada. The one thing that I really fail, and this is something that I really want to do, is to really kind of expand that Canadian footprint. Because Canadian is not, I'm a Canadian, and I worked, spent many years in Asia. Working for all American companies. And there's not really any Canadian presence outside of Canada. To me, that's something that I really want to see, if I can be able to just do a little bit of my part to make it work. So for me, you know, I've always, you know, this, you know, for sure I know that I need to have a presence in, say, LCBO. That's our retailers. Mm-hmm. You know, just kind of so that way I can get the production up and potentially look at one day to really, you know, mm-hmm. look at exporting, whether it's to the US or even Europe. You know, it would be really cool if mm-hmm. I could export my product to Europe as a made in Canada product. Mm-hmm. So having said that, so I was looking at the old things and looking at how hard it is for, and not to say that it's impossible, but you know, I didn't know that I had this thing in my, when I bought this company, they specialize in fruit wine, but they actually also have a really small cider product. It's really small. And I think we only made like maybe 3,000 liters a year, and then we would bottle it, and then that's it. And so we did that for the first year. And the reception is actually really good, and
from the
customers.
From the customers coming through.
This is 2013 though.
2013? That's not the, like, the high yet.
No, I would say that we're not even close to the high yet.
Yeah.
But obviously things really exploded because there's a couple factors, for sure, you know, just to be totally fair about this, I say the introduction of Brickworks Cider House in Toronto in 2015, that was the turning point. That was kind of the beginning of the turning point.
And what is Brickworks?
There used to be a contract cider maker based in Toronto. They were independent for about 2 years, and then they got bought by AB InBev.
Okay.
In 2016.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so for
that would be Labatt. Labatt is the Canadian arm of AB InBev in Canada.
InBev. And InBev is what in the US folks would know as like Budweiser, which is owned by InBev. And
That's correct.
InBev's
is a Brazilian company.
Brazilian company, multinational.
Brickworks was there are obviously guys like Palmies who kind of brought that mainstream kind of perception to mm-hmm. cider to extent. I mean, because there's still, at the grand scheme of things, everyone's still very small. So there's a couple names like Thornberry was kind of the longest name. But they're kind of on and off just because of the ownership change. They change owners like every 2-3 years. Hopefully this is going to be the last. This is going to be the last time for a while. But they have some management issues, I guess. I don't know why. But they're kind of like the Ontario craft cider. There wasn't really a Ontario craft cider destination.
Pommies was.
In 2012, so going to LCCA, so yeah. Ontario Craft Cider Association, I'd say we're more recognized in the last 2 years, but obviously when I first joined, I joined LCCA in 2013 when I first entered.
And when did the association begin?
2012,
okay.
Yeah. It was six guys, I believe, and Pommies was one of the founders. And Nick Sutcliffe from Pommies was actually the first chair of the association. Mm-hmm. So they did a lot to try to get it off the ground. But obviously the first 3 years was just like 10 dudes. just, sitting around the table. There's nothing really happening.
Are there women's cider makers in
Ontario? Yeah, there are. There are, for sure. Just recently, I think when it was first started in 2012, no, there wasn't a female lead in the cider. But now, I think there's probably three or four.
Okay.
Jennifer Dean, she's taking over County Cider since Grant Hall's passed away.
County Cider has been around. Okay.
And County Cider has been around. And obviously Ernest Cider by Michelle Ferris.
Okay.
There's got to be a couple more. So right now OCCA has about 40 members, full members.
And then we're saying you do a lot of alphabets here.
OCCA. Ontario Craft Cider Association.
Okay. Yeah.
Yes.
That's what it was, but I want to make sure the listeners know what it is.
Right. Too. So we're obviously the only kind of the craft cider producer organization in Ontario. Mm. Based on what I know, we're pretty much the only one really in Canada with some sort of operation.
Mm.
There's obviously Ontario is the biggest apple growing province in Canada. We actually grow more apples than Quebec. Quebec will be a close second, and obviously they're known for their ice cider in Quebec.
That's right. Yes, they are.
There are a couple guys who started to get into the cider space in Quebec, but just from a when we're talking about a low alcohol carbonated sparkling beverage, they're still very behind.
Interesting.
And there's obviously, and the third biggest would be BC, and there's everyone else that's very small. Everyone else, so there's the three bigger provinces would really grow apples: Ontario, Quebec, and BC.
Nova Scotia
grows maybe somewhere. I don't know how many acres.
There's a lot of acres. I've talked to Nova Scotia.
Yeah. I've talked to cider producers in Nova Scotia. It's their economic model is a little bit different.
Okay.
Because our pricing is still very consistent. I know how much Michigan are selling their apples for. I know how much New York State are selling their apples for. Ontario can compete with that. Not Nova Scotia.
Right, but Ontario can compete at the culinary level of apples.
That's
right,
correct.
Now, but the
we're not.
Cider,
yeah, so that's one thing, and that's probably something we could go into from a cider apple perspective. It's going to be tough, to be honest. But BC has some. BC has some sort of cider operation, but just because they're growing area and their consumer, which is Vancouver, it's so distant. It's a 5-hour drive, and it's not a smooth 5-hour drive. It's a lot of windy road.
Oh,
definitely. It's a lot of windy 5-hour drive. So yeah. Okanagan is where they all grow there. That's their fruit belt. It's Okanagan.
Yeah.
And for the producers to have a really good access to the city, which is Vancouver Coastal City, it's really hard. So I know that the Coastal City is trying to have their own stuff. And that's what makes Ontario really unique, what I find, is that there is a space for both sort of, so to speak, the kind of the more commercial-minded producer and for the craft producer. They are, I would say, you know, sort of like really funky, you know, going to, and when, I don't mean, I don't even want to make craft, you know, you have to use, you have to make sours to, in order to just, you know, to validate yourself as a craft. I wouldn't say that.
Oh, okay.
But I think the, even like the city cider producers in Vancouver are not even thinking about like doing that, but it's just like, oh, we just don't want to make. Because BC has a different kind of licensing. See, in Canada, it all comes down to licensing, manufacturing licensing.
Yeah, getting that, yeah.
It's very regulated, and, you know, different kind of licensing allows you to do different stuff, mostly by the dictates the way you can sell your product. And so there's the land-based, so that they actually have this license called land-based. So you essentially need to have, I think, 5 or 10 acres of land, and then you can sell from your site. We have that similar here too.
Yeah, that's a hard one. I mean, if you want to be in the city having like an urban cidery,
right,
then there's not really an opportunity to do that.
Right.
And that, so I'm wondering, in from your position on the Ontario Craft Cider Association,
sure,
and the government, like what
oh, we do a lot, yeah.
You know, I mean, this seems like a new opportunity for Canada at like an amazing level.
For sure.
So how much is the association involved?
Very much so.
Okay.
Yeah, very much so.
And are there key players in the government that you work with? What?
Yeah, it would be two. The two ministries that we talk to the most by far will be OMAFRA. So that would be the Ministry of Culture.
Okay.
And Ministry
Culture.
Of Agriculture. Well, they're kind of like
agriculture.
Agriculture.
Oh, agriculture. Okay.
Yeah, so they're kind of like the incubators of the industry, and they obviously do a lot of. I wouldn't say on the policy side, maybe not so much, but definitely from an incubation standpoint,
yeah,
they do a lot of. They do a lot of support for that. And the other one would be the Ministry of Finance.
Ministry of Finance.
So that's all taxation and distribution.
Okay.
And distribution.
So they're the ones who say what you could put on your label and all that?
Ministry of Finance is a very important arm of the government in Ontario, just because Ontario is a lot of things in Ontario's Crown Corporation. It's public run. And it's all under the arms of Ministry of Finance because they own those assets. So LCBO obviously would be, LCBO is owned by Ministry of Finance.
Mm-hmm.
So talking to LCBO, we still do our mental doubts.
So it's the distribution is government run.
That's correct.
Oh, okay.
It's owned by Crown Corporation.
And so there is no way to kind of break from that to do something.
Well, the politicians, I mean, that's one of the departments, obviously, has the government in place, lot of inputs in terms of how the public assets should be run.
Yeah.
So whoever is in the government's, They. I mean, it's obviously not very. It's not like something that's you just coming from an MPP's office, and then directly to LCPO. Someone. No, it doesn't work like that. But you know, this is a trickle effect, right?
Wow.
And there's a lot of things they can do from a high, you know, from a policy standpoint that they can influence.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, we are talking to, and you know, obviously talking to the Minister of Finance. It's mostly about. Having equal access with craft beer, which is kind of like the new darling of Ontario.
Craft beer. And that's a new.
I say within the last, say, 10 years.
Interesting.
Maybe
wow.
Not even 10,
wow.
Maybe 5 to 10 years.
So it seems, obviously you watch what's happening down
right.
South in the U.S. I mean,
that's correct.
We would say craft beer, you know, 20 years ago, if not more, you know, was
right.
Kind of hitting the stage.
Right.
So Canada is
so they made a huge drop off on in the, I think it was 2003. The government made a new incubation program that drastically cut the crappier taxes, volume tax. And I think that's when people started looking at this industry and be like, oh, I think I can actually make it work.
Right.
And I think the program was introduced in the early 2000s. I think the industry really actually started to really kick, kind of launch in around 2010. That's about the time when the industry really started to take off.
2010 for craft beer. That's so interesting to me to hear that. But
I mean, it's give and take, yeah.
Yeah, so yeah. That's kind of cool for cider because more in sync than craft beer leading the train. Craft cider could kind of come in and both ride that wave. And, you're not talking so much about wine. You're really looking at it from that, parallel universe, what's happening in the beer scene.
Right.
Really provides you with a lot of opportunity to...
Right. For sure, 100%. I mean, craft cider is definitely following the footsteps of craft beer, 100%.
Yeah.
It's all about getting the product into the consumer's mouths. All the marketer knows.
Yeah.
If you're in an F&B business, it's all about getting that product into, mm-hmm. And into the consumer.
And the consumer is much like the craft beer consumer where they come in and they're saying, what do you have?
That's correct. Smoke? And that's one thing that I think it's a different vibe and it's different demographics. I don't want to, say why is this happening to craft beer but not VQA wine.
Right.
Because they've been trying forever. They've been here for... at least 30 years,
mm-hmm.
And they've had a lot of supports,
mm-hmm.
but their growth is obviously not close to craft beer. The other thing is that craft beer is a provincial wide industry, so you can make beer anywhere you want.
Yeah, right.
Whereas wine is really just Niagara. It's a Niagara industry. People want to say, yeah, there's something in Prince Edward County. There's some Erie North, and there's some scatter slots for people who don't really grow vinifera grapes. But 90% of the industry is Niagara. It's a Niagara industry.
And there's nothing wrong with that.
From an access point, it's really restrained. It's really restricted the distribution.
Yeah.
When you're counting on LCBO, I wouldn't say craft beer made it because of LCBO support. No.
Right.
It's not because of beer store supports. So we have two monopolies in our retail distribution in Ontario. A beer store owned by multinationals, foreign multinationals, and LCBO. It's crap you didn't make it because these two distributors started saying that, I think we should support local craft products.
Right.
I don't think that ever happened. I think it's more because there's guys in that community who who's really into who's really believes it.
Yeah.
They're trying to get their neighbor bars. They try really mm-hmm. hard. I mean the first five, ten, nowadays to an extent, there's gonna be some pushbacks from guys who's used to selling say imports or mass domestic, it's an organic movement.
So that's why your approach and your business plan.
That's why I think craft cider has so much more potential than wine, because the apple growing region is a little bit bigger than grape.
It goes all the way up to the Georgian Bay. So
that's correct.
That's a huge area. But you had originally said that you are looking at how did you word it? Not necessarily just retail out of your storefront here,
right?
But to distribute, right?
Right.
And so that also kind of helps you kind of flood out into all the different places that will actually accept cider,
right?
And all the different bars. That's a very
There's not the same thing with the craft beer. I mean, there's going to be have that hyper kind of local movements where people are more tend to outside of GTA market where it's kind of everyone can come in there and do their thing, but Niagara, Kitchener-Waterloo, Ottawa, or mm-hmm. Or Georgian Bay, like you said, it's everyone's got that kind of their local influence. So it's not. I wouldn't say it's realistic to go out there and be the Molson of the world and just mm-hmm. say we're gonna. That's not realistic. It's more, so we're really involved in the community, in the local communities, because
Ironwood is.
Yeah, right. We are. Yeah, right. Yeah, for sure. And we do a lot of, we participate in a lot of local food events.
Mm.
And it's I think it really
are these
helps.
Like wine events that you can now bring cider to. When you say a food event, what?
Mostly like food truck events.
So you were able to have your own like little
set up with
a
jockey box and
How often are there like cider fests up in?
Right now, I think we have. Give maybe four or five. One or two really big ones, but
and what would those be?
Toronto Cider Festival would be a big one.
And when does that happen?
That would be September, I believe.
Always in September.
Around September.
Okay.
Yeah, Toronto Cider Festival.
And that's where you could expect cider coming in from just Ontario?
Yeah, they usually have... they did try to get the multinationals support, too. So
multinational, but how about Quebec makers or...
No.
No, so
no.
It's Ontario-focused.
It's Ontario-focused.
Okay.
Yeah,
and
that's...
What other cider fest, then?
There's a cider festival. That will be the exclusive cider. So no beer. Only cider.
Okay, yeah.
And then there's the another bigger one would be the Fairmount. There's a lot of time is cider and beer.
Sure.
So there's a couple big ones like that. Mm-hmm. There was a cider fest at Potacombe. But he's not doing it anymore.
So what would be a big beer fest where there would be, you know, a good number of ciders.
Oh, the biggest one would be TFOB, a Toronto Festival of Beer. That's massive. You been? It's crazy. It's huge.
And when is that?
And literally, it looks like
you had some good times there.
No. I was pouring. Well, I still kind of walk around,
sure.
But we were there for 2 years. And the kind of things that you see, like, you know, you thought you only see in those music videos.
Oh, my
like
goodness.
You see a Budweiser stage. Literally.
Yes, I know. Yes.
Literally a Budweiser stage.
Yeah, it actually happens. So when does that festival take place?
That would be July.
July, okay.
Yes. And there's a couple independent craft beer shows. Every town has their own thing. Like, you know, Niagara will have a Niagara Beer Festival.
Right.
Burlington has a big beer festival.
And cider's always present.
Georgetown.
Right.
Yeah, so every municipality tend to have their, and it's all usually pretty good. Like, the ones that we really like ourselves would be Because Beer in Hamilton. And that takes place in July. And so, all the show seasons, summer months, right?
Yeah.
That's a really neat one. And typically for those festivals, except for TFOB, which is obviously mostly imports, most of these small municipal ones are very local, and they're all craft.
Got it.
There's got to be the supply. There's got to be the market. You cannot not have one of the other. You got to have all.
At the same time, sometimes business has to kind of take that risk to really push the envelope
to be able
to get that consumer. It just can't happen.
Right.
It doesn't always happen simultaneously.
Right.
And, you know, the association has been around since 2012. So here we are, you know.
2018.
Yeah, 2018.
Yep.
So, you know, it's happening.
I think definitely the taxation is the, I say, if I want to point to one reason, taxation is definitely the biggest inhibitor of
growth.
What
would you like to see different there in the taxation?
Oh, like paying less taxes. Pay, like, just at least let us just pay what craft beer pays. Not even, I don't think zero is realistic, and I don't think that's right, but it has to be equal, and for people to, right now, we're taxed like a wine. So we pay the wine taxes, which I don't think makes sense at all, just because the alcohol is different, the consumer's consumption method is different.
Mm-hmm.
People are still making out of this, but people are doing it in a fashion that's it's really hard for them to multiply,
mm-hmm.
to scale up, and it's just tough. And obviously, I mean, compared to beer and wine, cider is still relatively a very novel drink. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, I have a lot of friends who are still, you know, I wouldn't say all my friends are super craft drinkers. Actually, you know, it's the opposite. Most of my friends, you know, they just drink Buds and Coors Light. And so,
well, maybe they're doing that because of the economy of it too.
Yes and no. I mean, it's I'd say there's Ontario is very controlled. So it's when it's very controlled, it's very easy for the big guys to have their say, and big guys definitely want people to buy their product. It's very easy for them to convince people to buy their product because they own the distribution. It's not like U.S. where there's a lot of organic movements.
Yes.
So people are, you know, constantly getting that advice. Oh, you're trying this. Oh, you know what? Yeah. And in American, I have to give it to Americans. Americans are a little bit more adventurous than the Canadians.
Huh.
I mean, you know, there's obviously different values. You know, and I don't want to get into that side of things. But just from a consumption standpoint,
yeah,
from a beverage consumption point, you know, we definitely see the craft growth, and everyone used the U.S. number as reference. If you talk to the brewers, you talk to the wine, the vintners, everyone says, well, U.S. is doing this and that. That's their craft consumption ratio.
Mm-hmm.
That's what we're shooting for.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, having said that, it's really hard when distribution is controlled by two companies.
Absolutely.
And
I can't even imagine.
And it's even though one is a crown corporation, technically they're supposed to support local companies. They're not going to say no to foreign advertising, you know, marketing budgets.
Sure, it's all about the bottom dollar,
yeah.
Keeping it going. So how close are you to like making any changes there? Taxation.
Something we're still in negotiation. Obviously, we're going to have our awesome, amazing election in about a week.
Uh-huh.
So you know, who knows what will happen after that.
A
little bit of that, for sure.
Yeah.
Canada is, I'd say, probably runs more of a federal system than U.S. does, at least from our industry.
Yeah,
in U.S., it's federally controlled. You know,
mm-hmm.
the TTB
mm-hmm.
controls the
state too, but yeah, each state has their
state
own
has a distribution.
Yeah.
They control the distribution, but ultimately, that's why it's so. It's but in Canada, it's really just provincial. I don't know why it came like this, but literally, it just the federal has very 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 little inputs in terms of the well-being of our industry.
Interesting.
It comes down to provincial leadership, and so it depends on who wins. Obviously, we already have a dialogue started with the relevant personnel in the ministries.
Mm-hmm.
But they can't really do anything until they know
mm-hmm.
who the boss is, right?
Right.
So we are talking to them and we are hoping to get, and I think that's definitely from a government perspective. I think definitely they want to see industry support it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just really the matter of finding out the best way so everyone's getting what they want at
mm-hmm.
the end of the day.
Of course.
But we had a good meetings with LCBO about getting more recognition, getting
mm-hmm.
more support, and
mm-hmm.
I think we're getting there.
Can I ask you, how many cideries are there in Ontario?
Just
right
one.
Now?
Just one.
One cidery?
Well, sorry. Oh, cidery.
A cidery.
Oh, sorry. Oh, I'm sorry. Cider week.
How many
we have 40 members.
You have 40 members in that.
But there's probably about 60, I say.
60 cideries. And,
yeah.
And do you know how many are set to be open in this coming year? Is that something that you're seeing people?
We're seeing a lot.
And
last year, we gained 20 members.
20 members.
Last year.
Just last year.
Yes.
So then, if you're kind of scaling that up in 2019.
Well, I think last year was a kind of anomaly. I don't think that's normal.
Okay.
I don't think we're going to see 20 every year.
Okay.
But definitely we're seeing interest from
mm-hmm.
definitely the existing
mm-hmm.
beverage producers, like
right.
the breweries or the wineries. We're looking at cider side, you know what, let's do it. There's that too.
So that's a change, yeah.
There's that too. Not to say they're converting into a cider producer,
but
cider is part of their portfolio.
Right.
And there's definitely guys who are starting off from fresh. They just only want to do cider.
Mm-hmm.
And we're seeing some of that too.
Okay.
And typically those are fairly small operations. and they might be generational farmers who doesn't wants to try something different. Every time I go to a small show, and I'll sometimes just always run into hobbyists, and then I'll go into the hobbyists. So obviously the Dragon Ocean farmers are just trying to figure out what to make. I wouldn't call them like cider fanatics. That's why they got into the space.
Yeah.
And for guys who are already in this industry, for them it's probably a business decision to add a cider into their portfolio. They're looking at it as a business. Kind of like, okay, yeah, I think we should, it makes sense. That's what.
But the brewery couldn't bring in a cider unless, say, because of the licensing, right?
They can get a winery license.
They could get a winery license, yes. Even though they're not, they don't have like.
They can sell retail.
They can't.
But they can sell it wholesale.
Wholesale.
So so the breweries would, and wineries, well, and wineries typically would have be able to. So, I mean, it's the same license for grape wineries too. But typical is it's a little bit difficult if you're trying to mix them together. I know some guys will do it, but it's very few. But for the breweries, it's really just going, for their wholesale business to kind of add
it. So they could sell it on premise off the tap, right, if a brewery made it?
No, they can't.
They can't.
They cannot.
Right. So that's a really deterrent too for...
Yeah, so there's talks about whether we need to, what that license should look like. There are people who think that, if we allow the breweries to have a free rein to just do whatever you want with cider, the cider-only producer is going to collapse. I don't see it like that. Mm-hmm. I think people ultimately still going to go with what they trust. Mm-hmm. And I don't necessarily think it would be like that. However, obviously the breweries and the wineries are doing it because of strategic reasons.
Mm-hmm.
And then the third group would be the so-called, the hobbyist, who really likes making, interesting stuff. And we have people like
Fantastic.
That too. And they they're typically the kind of people who do the funkier stuff.
Right.
And
they'll be pushing the whole
side. They're pushing the envelope. Yeah,
absolutely.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And the one thing with cider is that it does, the cider industry does allow people to be a little bit adventurous, unlike the wineries. Wineries have a huge capital in, investments to make it work.
Mm-hmm.
For people who are dumping a couple mil into the project, for them to be like, yeah, let's do something crazy. It's probably a little bit, it doesn't really jive that much.
Yeah.
But because cider startup cost is relatively a lot slower and smaller than the wineries, it's a lot easier for cider producers to be like, yeah, let's do something crazy.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're definitely seeing some of that too.
Mm.
And because our market, because of just how dynamic the Ontario market is, there are actually takers for that too. Surprisingly,
right now,
the first couple of times I tried something, I was like, no, come on. Like, I personally don't like it just because I'm an industry guy, but I'm just like, there's no way my friends or any of the people I know will actually drink this. But it turns out that people actually do drink this.
Hello, so, there you go, right?
So it's like, okay, well, I guess, and it's good to have people covering all angles, because, the last thing you want is everyone making the same stuff. You want people to making different stuff, so that way you keep getting to okay. And honestly, I still think cider has the growth slow a little bit, but I really think that we're not even seeing the full potential of the cider just because we haven't got that full support from the LCBO yet.
Mm-hmm.
I think having that some sort of support from LCBO is going to really change the way the things look. If we get a better taxation, that means we will be able to really compete with the imports. I'd say at least 50%, well, 50% sounds low, at least 80% of accounts still carrying imports.
Mm-hmm.
And if we have more ammunition, I think we can really turn the tide and then get people to really try Ontario.
Mm-hmm.
So I really think that from a 5 to 10 years perspective, and this is just within the current climates of the market. Who knows what the market is going to change 10 years from now?
Mm-hmm.
For sure, from a craft beverage standpoint, And obviously, we're not converting the older demographics. We're converting the 20-year-olds, mm-hmm. the 30-year-olds. Mm-hmm. You know, 10 years after, they're going to be 40, and we're still going to be converting. Like, you know, it's just from a you look at a demographic mm-hmm. Shift. I just think that's it's the days of, you know, people buying. I'm not saying they don't exist. They still don't exist. But the days of people going to a beer store and pick up a 4.8, or, you know, those of the same product, those days are gone. Like, who wants to drink that stuff like all the time? Oh, and it just the LCBO definitely sees that in their trend. That's why people are, you know, really starting to get into the mixer packs, and, you know, people are always trying to, you know, try different stuff. You know, I'm not saying that people always try different stuff. But it's going from, say, I only drink one beer to I drink two or three, to now it's like, you know, I drink 10, you know, I mix it in cider, yeah. I'm mixing different kind of product. Like, you know, people, I think that's definitely the trend, is that people don't want to just drink the same stuff. And that's obviously what's happening in the States, is that people just don't want to drink the same stuff over and over again.
Mm-hmm. And certainly gluten-free is a big factor,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, for sure. Cider, yeah. And cider is definitely, you know, we're not malt-based, so it's less stuffy. That's what a lot of people, you know, drink beer, they feel stuffy. Yeah. And, you know, cider doesn't give you that. It's its own thing. It's obviously apple juice fermented. And there's a lot, definitely a lot of people adding different fruit in there. Mm-hmm. To make it as some sort of blend, fruit blend, but I think going back to the cider apples, I think that's something that hasn't really been looked into yet. Mm-hmm. In the Ontario, it's something definitely some producers and some hobbyists are really keen.
Hobbyists are key.
Yeah.
From my perspective,
okay.
It feels like your hobbyists are key here for getting them involved, like having an association membership for hobbyists.
Right.
Giving them a voice. That's what we have in the U.S.
Right. I should look into that. Actually, I was reading a book that talks about the U.S. craft beer industry. I forgot the name of it, but it talks about some of those.
That's what drove the craft beer industry, was the hobbyists.
Yeah.
And doing tours over to Belgium and seeing what actual, you know, beer could taste like, the potential there.
Yeah.
And I would say that's actually what started the craft cider scene in the U.S.
Hmm.
Was the hobbyists.
Okay.
It started really in Massachusetts, where I'm from.
Right.
You know, we all put together this, like, cider fest.
Yeah.
That was just really, like, homegrown, doing cider making demonstrations, giving people an idea what the root is. And, you know, folks right now, and you're talking about the demographic that you're going for,
right.
That demographic wants to know where the product is coming from.
Oh, 100%,
100%. You know, they want to know that that's coming from a low spray orchard.
Right.
They want to have a connection with that orchardist.
Right.
So now you're bringing not only value to the cider industry, but you're bringing that to the orchard growers and the farmers. When you come in with that kind of force for your legislation,
sure.
You just change the whole picture. And so, definitely, 100%, it is the hobbyists that really supported that market and are continuing to, you know, without that, without the consumers, you could have the best product in the world and just be sitting in
farms. Yep.
And that happened with the craft beer scene.
Yep.
That is the revolution that happened for craft beer.
Right.
It was not just, you know, it was folks who were making homebrew.
Right.
And saying, I want to become a commercial brewer.
Right.
That's exactly what happened.
Right.
And they're kind of like your, like a target audience, and it's a nice way to increase your membership.
Right.
Because really, your association, this power is going to become behind the membership.
Right, for sure.
So having, you know, at CiderCon this past year, we were seeing a lot of cider enthusiasts. That's what they were kind of like, they don't necessarily have voting rights.
Okay.
But they get to come and be involved and get the enthusiasm.
Right.
It's kind of a lost market that you're not, like, catering to. And they're the ones who are going to come to the, they're going to be your biggest drum beaters.
Right,
you know?
Sure.
And so it's a really nice way to kind of bring that in and get the enthusiasm. Because what happens in the wine scene? it's the folks showing up and, you know, those wine enthusiasts.
Yeah, the drinkers, not the drinkers. Yeah.
The drinkers. Yeah, you know, yeah. Being at the Niagara College yesterday, talking to Dan there, what
right.
blew me out of the water is he said, we can't keep the cider on the shelves because people are constantly coming in asking for cider.
Right.
I don't, you know, I mean, they're meeting that demand now, right? Having
right.
that component, but to come up here and see how pervasive the wine industry is and to hear that at originally a wine college, if that doesn't, like, make you pause and catch your breath and go, holy crap, man, this is, like, serious. You are, like, right on the pulse right now.
Right.
And to just keep it with makers... It's like with the podcasts, you know, I know a lot of makers listen to this, there's no
right.
doubt. But the shift that's happening for Cider Chat is that now it's the consumers that are listening.
Now, wasn't that a good glass full of cider there? And we got a good backdrop on what's happening in Canada, specifically with the association. And I know that they're going to keep on moving forward because it's like almost like a wildfire up there right now in terms of the number of cideries coming on, the enthusiasm, the folks are really orchard-based, including also the urban cideries, cider bars, her father's cider bar based in Toronto. There's cool stuff happening there, and it's kind of like a Wild West, if you will. And Richard happens to be kind of a key member of that, being on the chair. Now, I did get to drink some of his ciders while I was there. We went into the tasting room, and I was able to have the original and also the oaked cider. They're using, like, I believe it was, if I recall correctly, spirals of oak, so it's not barrel-aged. And they're really rock solid. He was kind enough to give me some of the original in cans, and I've been enjoying it most recently and sharing it with friends down here. Really nice job. Easy drinking cider, no doubt. And I suspect it's going to grow as they are working feverishly on that addition. So best of luck to Ironwood and to the Ontario Craft Cider Association. I, for one, am someone south of the border, to that amazing country of wonderful people, all the Canadians up there, really rooting for you and hoping all the best for the continued growth of cider throughout Canada. If you go to the show notes for this here episode 138, you could see some photos from my trip to Ironwood. I have a whole slew of episodes coming out that I'm editing to keep on rolling out to you. We're going to have a chat with Peckham Cider from New Zealand. That's Alex Peckham. Oh, delicious ciders. And Michigan maker, California, and of course, Ontario makers too. I suspect that if you've listened this far, that you're figuring, hey, this is worth an hour of your time. And so I'd like to encourage you to become a patron of Cider Chat via the Cider Chat Patreon page. It's a great way to support this here podcast. Just find the links at ciderchat.com or Google Patreon Cider Chat. That's spelled P-A-T-R-E-O-N. It's a beautiful day at the tail end of July, and I hope the same is true for you wherever you are in whatever month or day of the week that you are listening to this here episode. This is Rio Wind Color, signing off for now. Looking forward to seeing you in Ciderville.
Yeehaw!